Chapter 11 Above Corellia. Luke's hardpoint squadron made a high orbital crossing over to Corellia's dayside, and then a fast descent into the atmosphere. The squad's speed was hampered by its having to shepherd the shuttle Chandrila Skies, an Ulshos space-capable light assault vehicle. Not much longer than an X-Wing, the LAV had a horizontal chisel-shaped bow and was much broader across the fuselage than a starfighter, giving it enough interior room to carry a dozen or so passengers, making it a good choice for the extraction of the teams of Jedi now operating down in Coronet. Despite the fact that the Corellian fleet continued to pace, and by its very presence taunt the GA fleet, no units had moved out against Luke's X-Wings. But now Mara's voice came across squadron frequency.
"We've got some distant activity. Looks like fighter swarms rising to meet us from Coronet."
Luke checked his own sensors. They did show a couple of fuzzy signals from ahead, but to his eye they could have been two cargo craft launching or a swarm of airspeeders punching up above approved travel routes. Mara, designated sensor officer for this mission, had a more capable set of sensors than Luke did. Mara's voice came back.
"Confirmed, two squadrons, probably some class of TIE, based on their movement patterns. We'll be within maximum laser range in 2 minutes."
"A pity." Luke looked off to port, down at the planetary surface. Here it was all green forest, separated from blue sea by thin lines of sandy golden beach. Such a pretty world. It was a shame that they had to send flaming starfighters and their pilots crashing down onto it. A new voice came across the comm.
"Attention starfighter flight approaching Coronet from course 357. This is Corellian Defense Force Headquarters in Coronet. You are classed as a hostile. Identify yourself or return to space."
Luke switched his comm unit to broadcast on the same frequency.
"This is Hardpoint Squadron of the Galactic Alliance Second Fleet. Luke Skywalker commanding. If your transponder hasn't recognized us as a legitimate GA unit by now, it's faulty. I'm transmitting you our ID and your orders. Stand down." He switched off the speaker and added, "R2, send the package."
R2 wheedled, the sound emerging from the cockpit speakers, acknowledging that the data package was away. The land below was becoming less forest, more irrigated fields. Luke could see sailing craft, excursion boats, out on the water. The Corellian comm officer's voice came back after a moment.
"I'm sorry, but Corellia does not recognize the authority claimed in these orders. Turn back or be fired upon."
Luke shook his head and did not reply. He reset his comm board to squadron frequency. On his sensor board, squadrons of incoming craft were clearly visible, arriving from two different vectors. Ahead, he could see the near edge of the city of Coronet, and above it, the two units of incoming fighter craft that looked like Corellian attack fighters. He counted 18 of them on his sensor board, and that just wasn't enough to pose a serious threat to a squadron of 10 Jedi pilots. Then the incoming squadrons turned aside, one to starboard and one to port, at right angles to Hardpoint Squadron's course. Luke felt a trickle of alarm.
"Roll out!" he shouted,
and followed his own orders, snapping his X-Wing into a port roll. He was aware of Mara keeping close to him, just behind and to starboard. An explosion shook his snub fighter and rattled his teeth. R2-D2 howled, but immediately began putting diagnostics up on Luke's data screen. Luke ended his roll a quick kilometer lower than his original position. Explosions continued to batter at his eardrums, but nothing as close as the first one. He glanced between his sensor board and the skies above. The skies were filled with puffy gray clouds. They looked benign, but each was the lingering evidence of an explosion, results of a ground-based anti-spacecraft barrage. Luke counted 10 X-Wings still flying. He breathed a sigh of relief. Then his breath caught. There should be 11 craft. "Chandrila Skies?"
he asked.
Took a direct hit, Mara said. She's gone.
The skies ahead of Hardpoint Squadron began to fill up with gray clouds, and beyond them two squadrons of Corellian attack fighters danced around, waiting.
Three, inform Dodonna of our situation, Luke told his communication specialist. See if they have updated orders to offer. Meanwhile, we're going in. If we can't get another shuttle, we'll bring our Jedi off Corellia if we have to land one by one and stuff them into our cargo hatches.
We have telemetry on CEC-1,
Fiav said to Klauskin, giving this operations designation for the nearest of the Corellian Engineering Corporation's orbital shipyards. The course followed by Dodonna and the rest of her group would eventually bring her up on CEC-1.
It's protected by a large number of starfighters and a handful of frigates, and there's the likelihood that as we approach, units from the main Corellian fleet will close.
Acknowledged, Klauskin said. He kept his attention on space dead ahead, where eventually CEC-1 would be close enough for him to make visual contact.
Fiav paused, as if waiting for a more comprehensive response, then continued.
Corellian starfighter squadrons are crowding our squadrons. They're just jockeying around, but eventually somebody's going to cut loose with a laser shot, and it's going to be a fight.
Klauskin nodded briskly.
Understood.
Fiav paused again, then finally said,
Luke Skywalker reports that his squadron has been fired on, and that their shuttle has been lost. They request an additional shuttle, but he also says he'll extract his ground team individually in the X-Wings if he has to.
Ah, good. I'm glad he has a plan.
Fiav's voice sounded pained.
Sir, do you have any order revisions?
Yes.
Klauskin was pleased with the decisiveness he could hear in his voice.
Bring the group down to half-forward speed.
Yes, sir. Do we provide the Jedi with another shuttle?
Oh, no. Skywalker sounds like he has everything in hand.
Yes, sir.
The words hung there for long moments. Then Fiav turned away to implement Klauskin's orders. Klauskin felt his brain revving like an overtuned thruster engine. Slowing the group to half speed would give him more time to decide, to think his way out of this dilemma. He needed the time. He thought and thought, but nothing seemed to happen. He had to turn the group toward space, batter his way through the Corellian screen if they decided to hinder his progress, and make it far enough out from Corellia's gravity well to activate hyperdrives. But that wasn't enough. He couldn't just run. He had to do something to salvage this mission. He had to intimidate or embarrass the Corellians, decisively. Somewhere. Somehow.
V-Swords, heads up!
That was the voice of Vibro-Sword Leader.
We have a unit incoming!
On Lys's sensor board, the swirl looked like a small formation of Corellian attack fighters. They weren't headed straight in. They had detached themselves from the Corellian fleet and were angling in, a course that was the counterpart of the interceptors, bringing them closer and closer to Vibro-Sword Squadron.
They're daring us!
That was V-Sword 8, Lys's wingman, a Quarren male from Mon Calamari.
That's right, Leader said. So keep it under control. Remember, first one to twitch loses.
8 asked,
And the first one to blink?
The first to blink will be Corellians, 8. Now pipe down. The attack fighters got closer and closer. Soon Lyssa could count them on the sensor board, a full squadron dozen. And not long after that, she could make them out visually, as now only a kilometer distant, they crossed in front of the stars. And on they came. Lyssa said,
Leader, 7. I think they're going to continue their course straight through us.
7, you're probably right. Squadron, They're going to move through our position as if they don't see us, trying to make us flinch. Bring your shields up only if it's a sure thing you're going to be hit, and announce the impact. If you hear me say incoming, break by wing pairs, bring shields and weapons up, and attack at will. Vibro-Sword Squadron doesn't flinch.
Lissa heard a chorus of affirmatives from her fellow pilots, added her own to it. Inside, she felt sick. This wasn't a clean fight. It was confused and tense, and about nothing but playing a game of dominance. She hated it. Her father would have hated it. She waited.
Coronet, Corellia.
As the Jedi's commandeered groundspeeder hurtled along one of Coronet's main avenues in thinning traffic, a howl of distant space raid sirens filled the air, and tiny gray clouds began to pop up in the skies to the east, the direction of the groundspeeder's destination. Fawn handled the speeder yoke with one hand, keeping his comlink pressed up between ear and mouth with the other. Zek, still stretched out on the back seat in Jaina's lap, had his eyes closed again. He hadn't passed out. He had sunk into a short-term Jedi healing trance, one that would help him deal with the damage of the burns and shrapnel, so that his injuries would not hinder him as much when the time came for action. Fawn put his comlink away.
"What's the situation?" Jaina shouted to him.
Fawn pointed toward the distant gray anti-spacecraft clouds.
That's your Uncle Luke and the Jedi coming to take us off-planet. But they've lost their shuttle, and he doesn't think they're getting another one."
"Ah,"
Jaina said.
"Team Tauntaun was ambushed the way we were, except that they got inside Sal Solo's mansion. They were attacked by troops and probots."
"Where are they now?"
"They're stealing a speeder and will rendezvous with us. They're thinking of stealing some payroll credit chips or kidnapping a holodrama star so we won't come back empty-handed."
"Good of them. Anything else?"
"The fleet jumped in and was ambushed, too. Nothing much is going right."
"We need a spaceport," Jaina shouted. "We'll have to steal a shuttle."
"All non-military air and space travel will be shut down until things are settled, and the Coronet spaceport is going to be crawling with Corsec."
"There are smaller ports, private spaceports, spaceports for outlying communities, and they'll have charter shuttle services," Jaina said. "I'm on it."
Colier's right cheek bulged with the cloth she'd stuffed in there to stanch the flow of blood. She reached into her blood-spattered bag and drew out a datapad. Opening it, she began searching the Coronet database she'd loaded into it.
"Find one with a female manager on duty," Thon said.
Colier grimaced at him.
"It'll speed things up," he said.
"If I ever find out you do that to get dates," she said, "I'm going to cut something off you."
"I am an ethical Jedi," Thon said.
Jaina couldn't tell whether the indignation his tone expressed was real or affected. Thon showed more emotion than most Fallene, but often it was a deliberate display, an attempt to put others at ease, rather than what he was truly feeling.
"I only twist people's minds in the line of duty."
Centerpoint Station. Jason rolled sideways, kicking the metal floor to propel himself, and managed to be a meter away when the first blaster bolt hit the spot where he'd been kneeling. He continued the roll, awkward because of the pain that racked him, but came up on his feet. Despite his blurring vision, he saw his lightsaber rolling across the floor, extended his hand toward it. Two white egg-shaped canisters hit the floor near him. He leapt backward away from them, rotating through the air as he went, and came down on his feet. But his legs buckled as he landed, and he crashed to the floor. He could still see his lightsaber. He exerted his will toward it. It wobbled on the floor and began rolling toward him. The egg-shaped canisters detonated, filling the air around them with white smoke. It rapidly spread, obscuring everything. But Jason managed to maintain his focus, and his lightsaber flew to his hand, before the whiteness closed down all vision. Jason rolled to the side again, heard and felt the heat from blaster fire hitting where he'd just lain. So they can see, he thought. Optics in their helmets. There had to be sound bafflers, too. Well, he had a couple of tricks remaining, and they had nothing to do with specialized gear. He knew more about pain than his opponents realized. At the height of the Yuuzhan Vong War, he'd been a prisoner for months, subjected to their tortures and customs of self-inflicted agony. He had learned to function within their embrace of pain, and other rituals that would break beings not accustomed to such hardships. A sudden infliction of pain could surprise him, surely, but it couldn't keep him down. He let the pain flow through him as though it were the Force. He internalized it, experiencing it as an old friend, albeit an old friend he didn't necessarily want visiting him too often. He stood and moved forward. His first few steps were awkward and slow, his later ones sure, and once he was in full mastery of his body and the pain that suffused it, he put on a burst of speed in traditional Jedi fashion, outracing the blaster bolts that tailed him. Pain-racked, unslowed, he neared the wall and leapt high up on it, landing on one of the ascending ramps. Now he was still within the smoke cloud from the canisters, but shielded from blaster fire from above. Moments later, he reached the walkway level where Thrakken Sal Solo had stood. He still could not see, but through the Force, he could detect living beings ahead of him. They were changing their order, some retreating, some advancing, the foremost of them aiming. The blaster bolts came, illuminating the canister smoke in curiously beautiful lines as they flashed toward him. He batted them back the way they'd come, mercilessly picking off the soldiers who'd fired them. Then he changed tactics. There were curious gaps in the formation of the living ahead of them. Those gaps had to be where the droid generators of the sonic waves were situated. He began batting blaster fire toward them, and a moment later, the pain-inducing shriek was reduced in volume by half. Three blaster bolts later, the sound and pain cut off entirely, and he could hear a mechanical cough as the motivator of the second sonic generator droid detonated dully within its housing.
"Cease fire!"
That was the voice of Thrakken, coming from the rear of the unit of six remaining Corsec operatives. They obeyed.
"Impressive, Jason. But I'd like you to understand. We have more than enough troops, droids, and special surprises to deal with you. They're here or rushing here. You're never going to get anywhere you can do significant harm to this station. You may be right, cousin.
But you haven't mentioned Ben. You're not aware of him, are you?
Still, I have to try."
The smoke was beginning to clear. Jason could see the nearest three Corsec operatives, one kneeling, two standing, resolutely barring his way with their blaster rifles raised.
"I suppose you do. Resume fire."
The soldiers opened fire. Jason advanced, hurling the blaster bolts back the way they'd come, but over the firer's shoulders, in the direction of Sal Solo's voice. Coronet Corellia. Suddenly, the explosions ended, and the skies to port, starboard, and ahead were clear of gray smoke. Luke checked his diagnostics board. His X-Wing had suffered some shrapnel damage to its topside starboard engine, but it was still running at 60% capacity. There were only 9 X-Wings in his squadron now. The snub fighter of the Rodian, Toil Sen, had been shaken to pieces by 3 near hits. Toil had ejected, and at the apex of the ejection had disappeared in the center of another gray cloud. Luke had felt the sudden cessation of his life. Now they emerged into the open skies where the Corellian attack fighters lived. "Keep sharp," Luke said, one eye to his sensor board. "S-wings to attack position. Break and attack at will. Continue toward original rendezvous position."
"They're coming at us from high, straight back,"
Mara said. And they were. Two streams of attack fighters roaring down at them. Luke dived, giving his X-Wing more speed, more time before the foremost attack fighters reached him, and adjusted his shield strength to double rear. Mara stayed tucked in on his wing. The attack fighters came on, green lasers battering at Luke's rear shields. R2 squealed a note of alarm. Alarm for Luke, and alarm for himself. As the three attack fighters approaching from astern neared, as their laser barrage hit his rear shields with the strength of greater proximity, Luke cut his thrusters. He could feel Mara, through their link, understand his intent and do likewise. Inexperienced fighter pilots would have overshot him and been easy targets for a moment or two. These Corellians weren't inexperienced. The moment Luke's X-Wing began to grow too fast in their forward sights, they veered, two upward, one to starboard. But Luke was far from inexperienced himself. Instinct and a touch, a glimpse of the future through the Force, had him hauling back on his control yoke and goosing his repulsor lift the moment he completed his deceleration maneuver. He was oriented upward as his pursuers banked. The only things he could see were blue sky and two Corellian attack fighters, one of them jittering madly in his targeting computer. He fired, red lasers closing on and hitting the portside attack fighter, then traversed right again and fired even before the computer confirmed a lock. Luke's first shot blew his target cleanly out of the sky. His second sheared the attack fighter's starboard wing off. The crippled fighter spun and plummeted, out of the combat. These Corellian attack fighters were not equipped with shields. Luke shook his head over that, even as he looked with his eyes and his Force senses for his wife. She'd peeled off to starboard and vaped the attack fighter that had headed off in that direction. Now she was angled back his way. Luke checked the sensor board. 9 X-Wings and 18 attack fighters had entered combat. Seconds later, 9 X-Wings and 11 attack fighters continued to occupy the field. He sighed. He was facing Corellians as brave, perhaps as skilled, as his friends Han, Wedge, and Corrin, and he was obliged to purge them from the skies. Sometimes he bitterly regretted the oaths and traditions that bound the Jedi Order to the Galactic Alliance. He turned back in the direction of the conflict. Mara tucked in under his port side and matched his speed and course. Above Corellia. Lissa's sensor board lit up like a festival parade. She glanced at the readings. Someone had a targeting lock on her. She forced herself to ignore that fact. Her leg bounced even more frantically.
Leader! 8!
Eight's voice sounded anguished.
They have a targeting lock on me! Permission to break and fire.
Denied, 8.
Vibro-sword leader sounded exasperated.
They're just trying to rattle you, 8, Lissa said. Provoke a reaction.
7's right, 8. Concentrate on her. Do as she does.
Lissa perked up. That was one of the few completely unsarcastic, unambiguously positive things Leader had said about her in the few months she'd been with the squadron, and he was saying it to a pilot with a year's worth of seniority on her. Now she could see the oncoming attack fighters clearly in the light reflected from Corellia's surface. They glided toward Vibrosword Squadron on what looked like an atmospheric arrival vector. As slow and unconcerned as if there were no interceptor unit in their direct path. She eyeballed their approach. If they didn't vary their angle, they'd pass right through the center of the Eta 5 formation, coming closest to V-Swords 5 and 6. They did vary their angle. One wing pair of attack fighters adjusted subtly, putting them on a direct intercept path with 5 and 6. Another pair vectored slightly, putting them on a straight course toward the positions 7 and 8 would occupy in about 10 seconds.
Leader, shut up, 8. Stay on 7.
Clamp down on it, 8, Lissa said.
She put her finger on the switch to activate her deflector shields. Minimal as they were compared with X-Wing shields,
they'd still provide some defense from an impact or an attack fighter's laser. 5 and 6 would contact their opposite numbers first, she calculated. They were only a few dozen meters apart now. Lyssa could have looked straight up and seen her own attack fighter opposition gliding toward her, closing slowly and implacably. But she didn't. She watched the sensor board, tracking 5 and 6, as well as her own opponent's progress. And then, the green blip representing V-Sword 5 and the red blip of 5's opposite number merged for a moment.
"This is 5.
Behind the woman's voice, Lyssa could hear cockpit impact alarms ringing.
"Impact."
"Incoming," leader said.
Lyssa snapped her shields on and kicked her maneuvering thrusters to point her nose down toward the planet's surface. Then she fired her main thrusters, putting the full thrust of its twin ion engines into the underbelly of the attack fighter just 3 meters away. Her ETA 5 leapt away from that fighter and its wingmate, hurtling toward the planet's atmosphere.
"Hey!"
She saw 8's green blip belatedly follow.
"Where the wobber... Hey, I'm hit!"
"How bad?"
Now at full thrust, Lyssa began a slow loop up from the planet, a maneuver designed to bring her around to the far side of what had been the attack fighter formation. An attack fighter taking a straight line to intercept her could do so, but one following in her wake would be left behind by the faster ETA 5 interceptor.
"No damage. Shield took it. He's not pursuing."
"So why mention it?"
"Yours is a kill."
Lyssa's eyebrows rose. She'd expected her thruster blast to do some harm to the fighter, perhaps surprise the pilot and cause him to bank away reflexively, but it must have penetrated the cockpit. She felt... She wasn't sure how she felt.
"Save up your feelings for later. Save your feelings for home."
Her father's voice again, something he'd said to her 50 times over the years. She decided to listen to him. Her loop completed, she looked down at the ETA 5 attack fighter engagement with both eye and sensor. Her comrades and their opponents were stretched out in a rough line a couple of kilometers long, wing pairs circling one another in a dogfight. A line. She liked lines. She oriented toward one end of it and continued her full-power thruster burn.
"Get ready to do some shooting, 8.
"Yes. I'm your wing.